It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Let's go. I'm your announcer, Zach Caton, and we're coming to you live on tape from Cassatt in the heart of 15th and 15th. Cassatt, a wine and craft cocktail bar at 1508 South, 1500 East in the Great Salt Lake City. Our guest today is Jeff Carter, who has written an initiative that would, should it pass, make alcohol more available to Utah citizens who want to buy it. Thanks, Jeff.
I wanted to do that. I thought that, you know, and I'll talk about this as we get going, but I thought the hardest part was writing it. I mean, it's 143 pages because the Utah liquor laws are seriously messed up. And I mean,
is what they are.
And now here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
Here we are. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Zach Caton. Caton. I can't ever.
The announcer. It's not Caton.
No, it's C-A-T-O-N, so I think it's Caton. He says it every time, and I'll listen closer next time. We're here with our guest, Jeff Carter. Jeff is a former wine industry representative with Southern Glazer Wine and Spirits. He knows how the system works when it comes to booze and wine and spirits and all of that stuff. You've seen it up close because you've done it. You were a restaurateur, too, you told me, right?
Yeah, I was in the restaurant business for 20 years from when I was younger, and then I left in 2003.
Where were you in the restaurant business?
My younger days, I started out management at Oceans. I don't know if you remember.
I remember it, yeah.
Out in Cottonwood area.
Nice tuna steaks and short skirts.
True. skirt steak.
Skirt steak, of course. Yeah.
And then I went into, I left, I knew that I couldn't rise any higher because it was kind of a family business, and mm-hmm. I decided to go help open some American Grills.
Oh, yeah,
and,
I remember them.
That wore me to dust, and after a year of that, I went to just have a quiet, easy job at the University Park Hotel, and where I caught Rick Majerus in the downstairs kitchen many times at 12 o'clock at night trying to find a sandwich.
Oh, that's right. He lived there, didn't he?
He lived there. Yeah.
Rick Majerus, yeah. Coach Majerus.
Yeah. And then I went after that. I got a call
make
from...
Make me a sandwich.
Yeah, make me a sandwich.
Okay.
He was looking all over one day. I had the keys in my pocket. Hey, Jeff, can you help me get some, you know, sandwich meat out of the...
Yeah. So, okay, Coach.
Whatever you need, Coach.
Anyway, and then I went. I got a call from a gal I worked with at Oceans, and she said they needed an assistant manager at Tuscany. They had only been open for a year, mm-hmm. and the husband and wife team were kind of the general manager, and they came from California, and they were just beat up after a year, and so they needed an assistant so they could take a nice month-long vacation,
sure.
And that's what I did for the next 7 years.
It's a pleasure to have you here, because now you've embarked on something that I think is really fascinating, and it's you're trying to change Utah liquor laws, which, good luck. But first, before we get to that, we ought to talk about...
Yeah, as you know, Let's Go Eat and Drink with Bill and Jimmy. We have the food that we have. I grabbed it from Caputo's.
I think it's with Jimmy and Bill.
It's with Jimmy and Bill. Anyways, we've got some delicious bread that we got over at Caputo's. By the way, we're over here at Cassatt Wine Bar at 15th and 15th in Salt Lake City, Utah. And a little Daffinois. So this is a cream-based cow milk cheese, triple cream. And we're pairing that with a wine, Bill, that mm-hmm. brought Jeff and I together.
How's that?
When I first met Jeff, I had known him and met him, but this was a wine that I was, it's a French wine, Southern Rhone. This is by Jean-Luc Colombo. And a lot of the bumblebees with this, right? Don't they
he's
a portion of their funds go to the bumblebee.
He's an organic winemaker in Cornas, and he kind of upset the Cornas region when he moved there because he brought his own way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Cornas was really old school when he got there, where they did everything by open vat out in the vineyard, and the vineyard practices were dirty and the cellar practices, and mm-hmm. he changed all that for himself and along with a lot of other winemakers through that area.
What is the bumblebees? You say portion goes to the bumblebees.
He's very passionate about bumblebees because the pollinators we're going to need. I mean, if you don't have pollinators, we don't have livelihood in the world. So. Part of he makes a red and a white called Les Abeilles Red and White, and that means the bees. And this is La Redon, which is a little different style. This is his Viognier, so it's not in the Lazabay wines or line, but it's a fantastic wine. I met Jean-Luc Colombo. He was he's represented by Palm Bay, and he fell in love with the West. He loves cowboys, loves Indians, loves that whole thing, and I spent a lot of time with him in Jackson Hole and all that stuff.
Cheers to that. Let's give it a little ring.
Is Viognier a grape? Is that that's a grape?
That's right.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Let's try a little of that.
We brought this on over at Copper Onion, had it over at the steakhouse.
It's got a little tartness.
We had it,
That's nice.
Current. It was on the wine list at Current with all that beautiful shellfish. Delicious wine. And please help yourself. Grab a little cheese with it. It'll be delicious.
Now, let's get into it, Jeff Carter, about what you're attempting to do here. You have started Citizens Initiative to amend and modify Title 32B. And should it pass, it would provide greater availability for alcohol to people in Utah who want to buy it. First of all, you need a sexier title.
Yeah, well,
Citizens
that's what,
Initiative to attend and modify Title 32B.
Well, I wrote it for the citizens. I mean, I could have called it Jeff Carter, but you know, I feel like I was born and raised in Utah, and I want to do this for the state of Utah. I've always felt that the liquor laws are terrible. Most people that live here and consume feel the same way. Mm-hmm. All the tourists that come here and want to have access feel the same way. And I think, you know, we hit 90 years at when Prohibition passed, and was that 2000? It's December 5th, so we're going to be December, at 90 years.
It's my sister's birthday.
Repealed Prohibition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have this just from living here and being in the business all these years and some contact and direct contact, and then working for Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits for 17 years and learning how everything works, I just decided that, first of all, I got fed up with it. I got fed up with dealing with what was called the DABC at the time. Now they're called the DABS to sexier that up. And
That stands for the Division of Alcohol and Beverage Sexy.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, shorter skirts there too.
Yeah,
so
skirt steaks, we're talking.
Yeah, skirt steaks. And then, you know, I just felt like I was beating my head against the wall constantly. My company had gotten so big that I had 5,000 wines I had to keep in my skull, which is not very big. And I just decided I'm over it. I'm done. I'm going to do something else. So I wrote a book.
Let's see. I had the title of the book. Well, you tell what the title of the book is.
Well, my book I wrote, it's called Mormons, Merlot, and the Utah Liquor Monopoly. And I originally wanted to call it Selling Wine in Zion, and that wasn't cool enough. Mm-hmm. So I decided to call it, kind of mafioso it a little bit and put Monopoly in the title.
It's a good title.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, there's 200 pages in the book that basically outline the DABC practices and how they operate, and it really illustrates that there should not be a monopoly on anything in the state.
A couple of questions about liquor laws. You've been here, been working in the industry for years and years and years, and there is a sensation sometimes that the liquor laws have changed for the better over a period of time. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think generally they give us a little tiny sliver here and there to keep people happy. But really, at the end of the day, a lot of it drives people out of state to buy products. I mean, why do we have big liquor stores in Wendover and
Evanston? Yeah, why do I go to Lee's Discount Liquors whenever I can?
You know, a lot of people drive to Costco in Twin Falls. They have a great wine selection up there.
We have the largest Costco in the world, in America, here, right here on Third West.
Right.
And it's the largest Costco, and we can't sell any liquor there. And Costco, I think, is the biggest wine purveyor or spirits purveyor in the country?
Right. They are. And I have talked with them a little bit about my initiative. And so after I wrote the book, I decided, well, it's one thing to show people what it's all about and complain about it, but I thought I'd better see if I can back it up and write the initiative. And I'm not a lawyer. I don't have any background in that. But what I did to figure it out was I pulled the initiative that was ran in Washington State that Costco paid $10 million for by a team of lawyers.
What did they run there?
Well, in 2011, they wanted to take the liquor out of state liquor stores because wine and beer was already private.
In Washington.
Washington.
Okay. And so wine and beer you could get in a grocery store, but you couldn't get liquor.
Right.
Or at Costco you could get wine and beer, but not liquor.
Not liquor. And they wanted their Kirkland labels in there. And what happened was they screwed up the taxation on it, and it still continued to drive people into Canada and Idaho and Oregon to buy liquor because the pricing was way out of whack.
Yeah.
So it was trying to be a positive step forward, great, maybe even model for other control states to take, but then it backfired.
It did backfire. Oof. But I think over the last 10 years, they've figured out a way to modify those that taxation so it's not as harsh, and I think less people are driving out of state.
All right, so you read that, and then you go through I assume you read the Utah liquor regulations from beginning to end.
Yeah, but so basically, I did take some information from that document, and I used a little bit of it. I worded it myself.
Yeah.
And then basically what they did was they double bracketed everything that didn't make sense. They crossed a line through it, and then they put in the stuff that did make sense, and they underlined it. And then they made a list of all the codes they changed. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge undertaking. It was reading through 300-plus pages of Utah liquor legalese, which is a Title 32B is what it's listed under. And after I had read through that and felt like I got something, I was going to run it 2 years ago, but I was too late in the year to do it. And the new Lieutenant Governor, Deidre Henderson, their team never got back to me. They never updated the website. I had no idea when the dates were, and I just decided to hold off.
Okay.
So I updated it, and I finally came up with 143 pages of codes that I've changed, and it's really significant. And
what's the nut of it?
The nut of it is turning the DABS, which is the sexy Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control, into a wholesaler. So rather than retail wine and spirits, let's make them a wholesaler. And this is modeled after Wyoming. I had that as a territory for a long time, and it's very similar. And a lot of people don't understand that Wyoming is a control state. And there's 17 control states around the country. And it just so happens that Wyoming's the best because they let capitalism run its course, as it should be, in the free market.
Utah's business friendly.
Well,
depends what the business is.
They say there are. Yeah, it depends on what the business is. But
break some.
I feel like one of the main components to this is keeping the money in the state. Like, let's keep. Why are we forcing so much out? And I think that most of the legislature thinks that it's a small fraction, and it's actually a large fraction. And there's thousands of people that have wine memberships that are sent to Evanston, and they pick them up at a UPS store up there.
Yeah. Oh, like the Wine of the Month Club.
Yeah,
Or the NPR wine.
Yeah, NPR.
You can have Morning Edition Merlot. Yeah.
What? It'll put you right to sleep.
It's a bottle of Merlot that they put a warm Morning Edition label on it.
It's part of your model with having the state be the wholesaler. Would they still own their properties and still own the wine stores and things like that? In addition to maybe if you and I wanted to open up a cool boutique-y French little liquor store in the avenues kind of a thing.
Well, there's a lot of facets to what I'm proposing, and it scares a lot of people. They're like, why are you asking for so much? And I'm saying, well, why shouldn't we have what other people in other states have?
How much are you asking for? I mean, let's say that this goes through. What is now the Utah liquor landscape look like?
Well, right now, the major markup on alcohol was when the DABS buys it, they mark it up 88%. That gives you a retail price in their liquor stores. They do have small supplier discounts, but that's a real small fraction of the whole overall profitability that they're making every year. My idea is turning them into a wholesaler. They're going to, I instituted a flat tax of 30%. And that's really typical of what a distributor makes in an open state, like Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits or RNDC or some of these others. And, you know, if you allow distributors to come in the state, then you have a problem like where you're creating this problem in Washington where you have to give 25 to 35% to a distributor. The state's going to want their money. Then by the time it gets to a retailer or a restaurant, it's going to be excessive taxation again. And it's still going to drive people out of state. So I really put a lot of thought into this. And the reason why I don't think we need distributors here is because of the way we have the interstates that bisect the state. And they, you know, there's goods flowing through here consistently up and down and across to all parts. We have inland ports coming online. We have international airports. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to get alcohol here.
Sure.
And so what I did was create this in a way that is business friendly and consumer friendly. And so to do that, the state would have to sell off all their liquor stores, except for eight of them. Right now, there's 52.
Mm-hmm. Why except for eight of them?
Well, because
strategically located,
like Wyoming has a central warehouse like the DABS has here, and it's in Cheyenne, and it's that was one of the inefficiencies that I could see there. However, they were really good at getting liquor across the state to somebody that ordered it in Gillette or way up in Cody or something like that. Sometimes it took a week depending on the weather, but and as long as you're a retailer and you're planning on it, you're okay. Mm-hmm. Well, my idea was, well, what if we had a central warehouse in St. George, one in Logan, one in Provo. We have one in Park City. We have one in Salt Lake. We have one in Moab and one in Vernal. So you have a little warehouse that the state sells a certain amount of products, you know, that they're able to cut down their inventory. Right now they have a lot of product on the shelves. And, you know, that's great, but in a way they don't manage it correctly. They're always out of stock on certain items. It doesn't, it's not very, beneficial to the broker because it's hard. I can go into all kinds of
facets. Let me see if I can focus this a little bit. So the way it would work was all liquor coming into the state would go to one of these eight distribution centers that the state runs. No, not all.
Not all. So the state would act as the predominant source. Mm-hmm. So they would carry, instead of 1,000 Cabernets, let's say they carry 200 and the range only goes up to $50 or $60. And then they want finer wines, they can get it direct. And so one of the things I did do was move the flavored malt beverages and the high alcohol beer out of the liquor stores and just let the beer wholesalers handle that.
Makes
so any time
sense.
That's over 5% is sold to the beer wholesaler, then the supplier has to remit 30% to the state. So they're just getting money handed to them, 30% of any of that product. It also would include all the local manufacturers. That's over 5%, 30% goes to the state.
All the local distillers and brewers.
So they wouldn't have to go through the DABS. And then I created a license called a direct shipping wholesaler, and this is very similar to Wyoming. This means that they can buy a license from the state, depending on how much volume they're doing on the previous year, and they can direct ship to any licensee as long as they pay the 30% tax to the state. Now, what I was able to show is how is this going to be profitable, because the state says they're going to lose $120 million from the general fund. Well, they don't take into account the money that's remitted by the beer wholesaler suppliers and by these new people that, you know, these Gallos and Mondavis that are buying the direct shipping license. So what happens is, as the cost of liquor goes down, the profitability goes up. So if 25% of the products that are consumed in the state of Utah are from direct shipping wholesalers and the beer suppliers, their profitability is $74 million. If it goes to 40%, then it's $124 million. And I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be 40 or 50%. So the idea is to have the state carry a select amount of liquors and wines that are available for any licensees that needs them right then and there and now.
Anybody who owns one of the liquor stores that they bought from the state.
Yep. Anybody that owns a liquor store, I have those being auctioned off at the end of the initiative. I got a dateline and how it's all going to happen. And it was really well thought out. And I have to pat myself on the back, because a lot of people have tried doing something similar and they've always been denied. I had the legal team for the lieutenant governor go through my initiative and they approved it. Mm. So, I mean, I got it through on the first go.
They say, so this, we will accept this as a citizen's initiative that could be put on the ballot because it's solid.
Right. They're just checking it to make sure you're not setting up a booze stand on the corner of 7th East.
Now,
Fifth
now
South.
Would we be able to buy liquor then at Costco and all of that? And also, would we be able to buy liquor in the grocery store?
Spirits. One of the facets to this is there's what's called package agencies in the state. And package agencies were originally these little mom and pop stores in Delta and Bullfrog.
I've been to all of them.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And those people own that building. They pay the insurance. They pay the bond to the DABS, and they are consigned a certain amount of alcohol. And when anytime that's sold, they give the money back to the state. So they don't keep any of it. They get a fee. And a very small fee. And it's not fair to them. So what I did was I changed their agreement with the state to a license. So that means they become a licensee. They can pay the 30, you know, they get charged 30% wholesale, and then they can mark it up and have a retail price. They make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, and right now there are 146 package agencies in the state. It's all based on population. It's all based on quota. And the quota right now is one package agency for every 18,000 people. Well, I lowered the quota to 16,000 because my idea is, well, Costco and Harmon's and these other folks could get a package agency license. And then
I see.
And then, yeah. And so I didn't want to freak everybody out. You know, the biggest thing the press is getting wrong is, oh, he wants a booze in every corner store and convenience store and grocery store. That's not the case. It all has to go on. You know, the Liquor Commission has to decide which grocery store, which whatever gets a liquor license. And it's all based on where their proximity to schools and parks and other licensees. And, you know, just because like Costco and Murray, they wouldn't qualify for a liquor license because they're right across the street from Murray High School and just down the street from Murray Park. And there's a hospital right next to it. But the Costco and
you don't want those patients at the hospital getting boozed up
and medicine.
Yeah, but the Costco,
or better yet, the surgeons getting boozed up.
Well, walk right across the parking lot and grab some Kirkland vodka.
And then perform
martini
surgery.
Martini lunch.
Yeah, hand me the anesthesia. Yeah.
So you have, in order to get this initiative going through, don't you have a couple of steps to accomplish by February or something?
To be truthfully honest, I wanted to give you an update. I got I thought that the hardest part to this whole initiative was going to be writing it because it took me a couple of years. Mm-hmm. The hardest part's been finding funding because a lot of people don't believe it can be done. And, you know, I mentioned a minute ago that Costco had spoken with them and we exchanged a few emails. They called me a couple of times. I called them and right now they have my initiative. They asked me on the last contact with them to send us the initiative. We'll have our legal team take a look at it. We'll meet and we'll let you know.
This is Costco. You're the up in Kirkland.
Yeah.
You're dealing with them.
Right now, that's the major supplier or supporter that I am courting. Harmon's told me no, and I think that that's partly because
I know
of the...
It's because they're, you know, they are perceived as...
Conservative.
Yeah, and they are. They're perceived as the...
But if you ask them if they want a package agency license, we'll take one. Yeah, you can do it, but we'll take one.
My grandfather.
Let us know when it's done.
My grandfather was the best Mormon man in the world, but he owned a building that the state wanted to put a liquor store in, and he said okay, and they paid him rent.
Wow.
So you know, and he was very against liquor, but he was not against collecting rent.
Well, there's a lot of people that are LDS that consume lightly, I will say.
Well,
and they don't want to be known, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I grew up LDS, and I just defected it to 14 or 15. I needed to open my eyes a little bit.
So how can people help with this? What do you need? What do you want?
Well, I've only got, right now we're at September, what is it today, 20th?
Yeah.
I have to do 7 public hearings around the state before I can print the packets and then I can go get the signatures. And this all has to be done by February 15th. I feel like I handed this on June 9th because if I waited any longer, I wouldn't have any time. But as it turns out, the funding part of it's dragging it out. And, worst comes to worst, if I have to pull the initiative, which I really don't want to do. I mean, if I can get some funding by the end of the month, maybe Costco steps up. I'll go off and do those town hall meetings across the state and public hearings and start the ball rolling.
Wait, do you do that? Would you do that by yourself? I just picture Jeff Carter out there. Hi,
Yeah, it's me. I'm rolling into town.
Yeah. kind of daunting.
Well, there's a process to that, too, and they've grouped the counties by 3s and 4s, and you have to plan it all out. You have to give notice to the lieutenant governor, all the senators and the representatives from those areas.
But are you a one-man band right now?
Basically, I'm doing it all myself, so it's been tough.
But
you know, you get funding, then you can start adding some people.
Yeah.
And I'd need a videographer. I'd probably need a few, because it all has to be filmed and returned to the lieutenant governor. And then the process after that is going out and getting signatures. And there is a company here called Political Landscape, and I've talked with them, but they have the ability to mobilize a team to go get signatures.
Sure.
That's where the money comes in. Mm-hmm. And they've told me it's anywhere from $1 million to $2 million. I don't know. I've never done this. So, the people that ran the marijuana initiative was about $1 million. So
have you spoken with them, how they got all that? Because I kept saying on the radio, no, this will never happen. It will never. And I was surprised.
Well, and that's why I think Utah's changed. I mean, the minds are different. A lot of my family, probably 75% are still LDS. So they're with me. They don't care. They're still going to, they're not going to drink. They're going to walk right past it just like they do the beer right now.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do is to start the ball rolling. And worst comes to worst, maybe I use the next year to fundraise and contact people and then and then put it right at the beginning of 2025, introduce it again, and run with it.
Anybody listening to this right now, is there anything they can do to assist this effort, or is it still...
Well, you know, I'm hesitant to take small donations at this point, just because if I don't get any big donors, then it's like I got to return the donations, and I'm not going to keep them. I don't feel like keeping them. It's not my money. You know, I would definitely like that support. I mean, I should have thought of this a long time ago when I wrote my book, but I, you know, my author name is Spartacus Falanghina, and that's my website, and it's a hard one to remember and find.
And it's what?
Spartacus Falanghina.
Yeah, no, that's...
And I did that because it was symbolic. I still have my job, and I didn't want my company to know who it was. And then when I figured...
Well, then why didn't you just say Tom Jones?
When they figured the jiggle... Well, it had to be... So, well, I wanted it to be funky, you know?
Kilroy.
You nailed it.
Yeah. Well, Spartacus was a famous Thracian slave that rose up against the Roman government, like the Utah legislature.
And what's the second word?
Falanghina. It's a grape.
Oh, Spalanghina.
Falanghina.
With an F, yeah. Falanghina.
So I can't even really, in good conscience, direct people to your website. Right
well,
now.
I could. It's SpartacusFalanghina.com if you kind of get it right. Or you could put 32B initiative in it, and it'll Google it.
Do that.
Yeah,
if you want to find out more about this, I mean, and delve into it and support Jeff Carter in this effort, at least morally and spiritually.
Yeah, give me a pat on the back right now. But
send him an email, you know. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to raise a glass to you because it's been a lot of work, man.
Yeah, it has been, and I'm not down on it. I don't feel bad for anything. I wish I was a little further along at this point, but I'm also realistic that it's an uphill battle. I've had a lot of supporters contact me. I've had a lot of people go to my website and want to volunteer, and when I explain what I'm doing, then they say, "Yeah, keep us posted." And we know it's a battle. Just we'll be watching. So, it's gonna take a couple years.
I'm not gonna spell it out or anything, but Spartacus Falanghina.
Classic spelling of Spartacus.
And then just sound it out. Use your phonics.
Phonics. Hooked on phonics. Falanghina is FalanghinaCom.
Oh, yeah. See, even with phonics, I wouldn't.
Well, it comes from the word phalanx is derived from Falanghina, and it's because the grapes grow together in clusters to form a shield.
As in a phalanx.
Yeah. Like the movie 300 where they put their shields together. Yeah. So that's why the movie is, or the name is symbolic. Spartacus, he's a rebel. Falanghina, because we're all protecting each other and helping each other.
You should have been an attorney.
I could have, I guess, if I would have put my mind to it. But I don't know. I'd probably be retired by now, not doing this.
Another
helping somebody else do it.
Another thing you can do is look for the book, which is
Mormons, Merlot, and the Utah Liquor Monopoly, and it's on Amazon. I've had some really favorable reviews on it. People like it.
I've got a copy.
I wrote it in a fun way to entertain rather than just be this dry droll of Utah legislature and liquor laws. So it's all his stories about winemakers and some of my stories of how I, you know, bootlegged some champagne into the state.
Excellent.
Basically it was a felony. But if people want to read it and get a good kick out of it.
Now, I hope that the state doesn't hold it against you as you try to pass.
Maybe Sean Reyes is listening and he's going to come out. But I think the statute of limitations over for probably. That. It was a while ago.
All right.
But you know what these guys,
he's good
they
at
could,
funneling things.
They could change anything they want, right?
Jeff, what a story. And good luck and congratulations, I mean, on all the work you have done. Yep. And wouldn't it be great if you get a phone call from Kirkland, Washington, and Costco saying, you know what?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about it. I mean, even if we have to wait till 2025, I'm still going to, as long as I'm a Utahn, I'm going to continue to try to do this because I feel like they always say it should be your gut feeling that this is what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I feel like I know a lot about this and enough about it that this is maybe what I'm supposed to do.
Good.
Ah, what a good feeling to that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers.
Jimmy
Santangelo now. Generally, we do a little splash of news here.
All right. I got two top stories here. I don't know if you heard, 600,000 gallons of red wine flow through Portuguese town after a spill, triggering an absolute environmental warning.
The fruit flies.
The fruit flies. Can you imagine that?
It was like a river. I saw a picture of it.
Total river coming down the street. So locals in a small town in coastal Portugal were left stunned when a river of red wine flowed through their street after two tanks owned by a Lavera distillery, which were carrying a whopping 600,000 gallons of booze, suddenly gave way. A video posted online that I think you're talking about showed the red liquid rushing down a steep hill in the small town of São Lourenço do Abaro, home to some 2,000 residents. The spill, which was so massive that the wine escape could have filled an Olympic-sized swimming pool, triggered an environmental alert.
Sad.
Thanks, sad. Awesome. Anytime that happens, it's a sad day.
Yeah. Go swimming in that pool, right? Last story here. According to liquor.com, the comeback of the disco drink is on the rise.
What's a disco drink?
So disco drinks, yeah, I'll tell
you. I worked in a disco and I didn't.
Well, no kidding. Yeah, they're colorful,
it's like
fun.
What Chevy Chase did in Caddyshack where he snorts the salt and then.
I was thinking of the Cosmopolitan, but that's a good one. Some gems from the 1970s and 80s are being revisited with more delicious results. The term, quote, disco drinks has been used in recent years to describe the cocktails that dominated the bar scene from the 1970s and 1980s. Though it sounds fun, it's sometimes used to imply a tackiness that is at odds with more of the serious drinks of the craft cocktail renaissance. Here are a few that you may see at your local craft cocktail joints right here in town. The Grasshopper.
Oh, I remember that.
Coming back, right? Cream de cocoa and a little cream. Yeah. So very creamy drink. Yeah. The classic 7-7. Seagram 7 and 7-Up. The Godfather, which was inspired by that two-part drink. This is Scotch and Amaretto.
Oh, wait a minute. Harvey Wallbanger has to be
there. Harvey Wallbanger's got to be in there.
Scotch and Drambuie. Is that a...
That might be a... might be a different one. Yeah. Might be, yeah. And Between the Sheets, a naughty name.
I can see how that would be popular in the, the disco era.
Between the Sheets. A name based after the screwdriver, Vodka and OJ, which is the Harvey Wallbanger, then when you add Galliano, right?
I was, when I was a graduate student at Penn State University, the corner bar at the Allen Hotel every Monday night was Harvey Wallbanger night. And man, was that a mess.
That was first drink I ordered at a wedding. I overheard it at my table. I was 13 years old, and I was always tall and had my suit on. And I walked up, and I had a dollar in my pocket, and I put it right on the bar. It was an open bar, right? Here was the tip, and I'm like, Harvey Wallbanger.
Every time I hear a Harvey Wallbanger, I think of a big rabbit wearing a hat. So I don't know why that is, but... Harvey.
Yeah, Harvey, I guess. Yeah.
But the Between the Sheets is made up of rum, cognac, Control, that must be where the OJ influence comes in, and lemon juice. Well, I just hope the disco music remains a genre of the past, but I welcome these.
What about the
cocktails.
Zombie?
Yeah. That was a big one.
Yeah.
And that's your splash of news.
All right. Now, shall we move on to the card game?
I think so.
All right. Explain this, Jimmy.
So what we do is, Jeff, you remember this, back in the days when pre-shifts, you're just doing something clever to keep staff awake and listening.
Thursdays,
I would do Dirty Joke Thursdays, and I would do flashcard of both wine questions and PG-related sexy questions. Couldn't do it today, but I thought we'd bring it to the podcast.
Now, are there any sexy questions in here?
There might be. I picked three. I think there's one. It's sandwiched between.
I haven't looked at the answers.
My sexy left at 50.
It went to the DABS.
Desert Industries on the shelf, markdowns.
I don't know the answers either. I haven't looked. Question number, that's the answer. No, which I didn't read. Question, when is Beaujolais Nouveau released each year? Is it May? That's number one. Number two, 3 weeks after harvest. Three, the third Thursday of November. Or four, September 1st.
Third Thursday of November.
Yep.
That's
picked correct. That question because Jeff would help me bring in a barrel of Beaujolais each year, and we would have a Beaujolais festival.
It was a grind.
I remember you doing that.
That was a grind. It was.
I remember you doing that at Current.
You're welcome.
Did you do that at Current one time?
Yeah, I did it at Current. There. Did it at Copper Onion, Current.
It's interesting the way they do that because it's basically not been put through oak, but they have to rush it around the world on that day so everybody can take part of that.
That's amazing. And you know, I was there when Jimmy did it. He, I think it was an invited group,
yeah, media
current, and it was delicious.
Yeah,
I mean, it was really good.
But imagine that
it's a little light and fruity. Crush it, make wine out of it before you send it out. It's
it's like drinking a grape.
My favorite Beaujolais is not even. It's not Nouveau. It's from one of their little independent districts. But they have Moulin Avant and what's the volcanic one I'm thinking of? It's
not Brewery, Fleury, no.
Not Fleury.
These are ones that you can get these here.
They're a little bit more refined. Some of them have a little bit of oak in them, and they're a lot better.
I just like that new juicy flavor. It was really exciting. Yeah. All right, here's question number two. During Prohibition, hard alcohol was prohibited, but wine was freely permitted. True or false?
False.
False. I think
you could make wine for religious purposes. That's where the Madhavis.
Yeah, and your own consumption, maybe.
In your own consumption.
Wine was permitted for medicinal or religious consumption.
I've always been sick during
medicinal.
That.
Yeah.
Or for personal use. Personal use. Families could make their own. Yeah. Okay. You could make your own wine at home.
And one of the ways they got the wineries helped with that is they would dry out the grapes and the pumice, and they would put it into bricks. They would send it to people that wanted it.
Bricks of dried grapes.
Yeah, and then you could break it apart, and then you could make something out of it.
Yeah.
But probably be grappa at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, part of the direction says, whatever you do, do not add sugar and yeast to this at this. And that means do this.
Because it'll ferment and turn into alcoholic beverage. That was great.
And finally,
whatever
this,
you do.
This is a dirty question.
Uh-oh.
You're reading the personals, and a woman describes herself as natural. This means A, she wears no makeup, B, likes sex outdoors, C, has real breasts, or D, well, I'm out, wants hairy men.
Oh, I was thinking it was going to be like a shaving kind of your natural.
Yeah, I thought it was all natural like the early 80s and the 70s.
I
think I know what it means.
Outside? Oh, what about?
Could be out.
It's, yeah.
Oh, natural breasts.
Yeah, natural breasts.
I don't discriminate in that area too much.
Natural wines. Natural breasts. Was that the answer?
Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen. That. That's it. Now, please, Jeff, what's your book's name again?
Mormons, Merlot, and the Utah Liquor Monopoly.
Look for it online. Amazon is where you can find it.
Amazon's the best spot.
Yeah. And if you want to find out more about the initiative, the Citizens Initiative to amend and modify Title 32B Alcohol Beverage Control Act, and we really should do that.
So you can find it easier. Well, I mean, I'd love you to visit my website. I do have some shirts on there and stuff if people want to buy one. They're kind of cool. But also you can go to vote.utah.gov and then look under the link initiative or more resources for voters, and then you'll see initiative and referenda, and mine will be the top one.
All right.
And you can read the first six pages. It'll tell you all about it.
Nice.
Ah, good. Thank. And so anything, any way we can help in the future, let us know. We'd be happy to do it.
Yeah. Let's see what turns out after the month. And if I, you know, it looks like I have to pull it, then that's fine. You know, once you start gaining signatures on an initiative and you pull the plug on it, then you have to wait 2 years before you can.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. It's easier
so
to.
So I would rather not spend the money, learn, know, you know, just keep what I've learned in my head. And because this has been an experience so far.
Mm-hmm.
But real quick about the title, my title was different than that. They asked me to change it to that, and
what,
I did.
What was your title? You did mention it early. But.
It was Title 32B Liquor Law Initiative, or it was.
Something
I can't
like
remember what it was, but they just asked me. They the second day after I'd submitted it, they said, and when I walked it in, it shocked them. I handed it to the lady at the lieutenant governor's office, and she's like, "What is this?" And I said, "This is an initiative," and she's just like, "Oh." And, you know, it was a lot of papers. And then 2 days later, they called me and asked me for a digital copy. And that's when they asked me to change the name of it. And I knew I'd done something right.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah. Excellent.
Well, I got a closeout here for us.
You do?
Yeah.
What, you're going to close it out?
Yeah.
Oh, I read that closeout. Why did you decide to do this?
Oh, keep it nice and tight.
you're trying to take over the goddamn show is what you're doing. Okay. You go ahead. Because you know Zach, the announcer, comes on after this.
Oh, he does?
Yeah,
he does. Well, you can do your closing.
Well, no, go ahead. No, I, Jimmy, I want you to read that. Please.
And that's your Let's Go and Eat and Drink show with Bill Howard and myself, Jimmy Santangelo. Mm-hmm. We'd like to thank our guests for joining us, Jeff Carter, along with Cassatt Wine Bar, located at 1508 South and 1500 East in Salt Lake City, Utah. Also, a shout out to our producer, Dawson Dow, on controls. Thank you for listening, and email the Let's Go Eat show at gmail.com with any questions. Till next time.
Okay. Now, what I'm going to do is we'll leave that in, and then I'm going to say, Zach, do it right now.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Comments, questions, and angry complaints to the management should be directed to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow. Our theme music was composed and recorded by Doug Wild. Recording facilities from Cassatt in the heart of 15th and 15th. I'm Zach Caton, and now I need a drink. Let's go.